I know we're excited for these three that, and plus the device that just got FDA approved, but what about, there's some new ones that are very, very close. And so let's talk about, Dr. Brimer, about this one, AVR-MD-001. I don't think it has a trade name yet. So just curious if you're familiar with this new product and if you want to describe it and you know what your thoughts are.
So hopefully the trade name won't be harder than AZRMD001, right? But so what's interesting about this one is up until now, you know, we haven't ever seen something that would change the quality of the meibum that's being secreted. And this is an ointment form and it prevents buildup within the meibomian gland. So in these phase two trials, the actual quality and the amount of oil, the health of the oil that was being expressed changed in these patients. So that's pretty monumental. That's very exciting to me because every day when I'm explaining MGD, I'm like, all right, there's nothing I can put on there that's going to change what you're producing. It's what goes in your mouth. And so this could change my whole spiel, not to mention help a lot of patients. So there's that. Now, the other really unique thing about it is a twice a week dosing. And so when we think about compliance being the number one hindrance on all of our outcomes in most cases, twice a week. So that is pretty profound for us. It's not something we're used to. I'm excited about that. And results were quick. As early as day 14, they saw a change in the meibomian gland function and in the patient's symptoms.
Beautiful. I know it's going to be, I'm really excited about this product too, but I know we have a little bit to go until that becomes available. But it's, I think it's going to be a pretty important treatment for our patients. And I'll ask Dr. Nichols about this other product, which I'm very excited about as well. It's a product that they're actually, PDUFA date, I believe, is in November, December of this year. So it actually may be available to us in at the end of 2023. It's called Reproxalab. And I'm Dr. Nichols, I'd love for you to just share your thoughts and understanding of this new product.
Yeah, this is an exciting one too. A different vein, though, than the AZR-MD-001, but it is intended to be an anti-inflammatory. So before you say, what do we need a new anti-inflammatory for? This one impacts the inflammation pathways higher up on the chain, so to speak. So it is a Reproxalap is a reactive aldehyde species called RASP. It's an inhibitor, and it's believed to sort of quench the inflammation, because the RAS molecules themselves are pro-inflammatory. They actually bind to the kinases, which initiate sort of the inflammation pathways fairly high up on the chain. And so it may have an impact on not only things like ocular surface dry eye, but allergy, you know, allergic conjunctivitis and uveitis, to name a few other ocular conditions that are inflammatory based. So, you know, you may not need that new test that is IgE versus other if you have Reproxalap as your opportunity. So it'll be interesting to see how people fit this in. It does not have the side effects that steroids have. So it acts like a steroid without being a steroid. So you won't see cataract you'll see cataract, but you won't see it as a side effect or increased IOP. So that's exciting too. And it also has a really silky or smooth feel to it. You almost can't even feel it at all. So that's exciting as well. I'm very, it is, you know, we will know end of November. And so in the early part of new year, we may have it in our practices, which will be super exciting too.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm excited for all these new medications for our patients. I think, I know each of you are feeling the same way. I'm going to jump to this next challenge, which is something that we face. So we're going to have these new medications. We have our current medications. And I'm going to kind of start with Dr. Matossian on this one, which is, you know, We're here, a mix of, you know, the four of us are a mix of MDs and ODs. We think alike in many ways in the way we manage dry eye. I don't think there's any difference between how I manage it, but yet sometimes there can still be some challenges when you're from different practices. So for example, within my practice, I have a little different way of managing dry eye than I do when I'm outside of the practice. I just wanted you to share, Dr. Matossian, any thoughts on some of the challenges when you're managing patients that have dry eye that are not in your practice, but that maybe you're co-managing with another doctor nearby because you're sharing a patient for some reason.
There can be challenges, but I think they're very much overcomable. And the reason is, if we keep the patient in mind, And if the patient remains the center focus of what we are all trying to do, we create a network of collaboration, care, whether MD, OD, perhaps there will be other physician extenders coming into ophthalmology like there have been in other fields of medicine, such as PAs and physician's assistants and so forth. Our goal is to provide the best care possible. It's through education, through local forums, the virtual forums like this one, where everybody can collectively do the best they can to help our patients who are suffering so much.
All right. I love that. And that's a great way, because I think I agree. We need to be patient-centric. Dr. Brimer, any thoughts? You know, again, I know you're more of a referral practice, so patients are getting sent to you by someone many times, I assume, and you're going to send them back at some point. How important is communication? Or what are the challenges that you're facing when you're working with other practices, you know, doctors outside of practice, whether MDs or ODs?
My biggest challenge is in a timely referral, because then when they get to me, they're frustrated that the person didn't send them sooner. And I have to kind of manage that and smooth that over. But the way that I've tried to assist this communication process, we made a marketing kit and I basically made a little 3-minute video of everything we do. Here's the problem. Here's what we do. And my staff went around and basically it showed them our investment into this space. Here's everything we've purchased. We've got all the bells and whistles. We can take care of this patient. Here's the report you'll get back. And then I made these prescription pads. And on it, the top page says, tell me what you want me to do. Check the box. Everything you want me to do. Is it a dry eye eval? Is it just a treatment? And then the bottom says, when do you want them back? And is it just with the report? Is it after the treatment's completed? Is it for non-ocular surface disease symptoms? You know, once they're just for routine care. And then that page gets faxed to me. The second page gets handed to the patient telling them what to expect. But here's what this did. It created a safe place where I am there to serve them. I'm just like if they sent somebody to you for cataract surgery, you know, that they're the gatekeeper, they are in charge of this patient and their ultimate care. And I don't want any part of that. I want to do this and I want to serve you, the doctor, by helping your patient get better, but you are the one in charge. And when I did that, instead of like going and asking for referrals and touting my skill or expertise, I don't say a word about that ever. There's not even anything in there about me. It's all about my investment into this and into my patients and into them as referring physicians. And I want to get them better. So in my packet, it also talks about, you know, meibomian gland loss and screening for it and looking for this. And, you know, my next step, I want to put on a local CE at some point, because it's not about competing for these patients. There are plenty to go around. And it's just about identifying when do they need elevated care and what's the best thing for them, just like you said, Cynthia.
Oh, yeah, that was a great overview. And I love that. I think you're really helping, you know, educate your local community of both MDs and ODs, how to work together and how to send the right patients in early. I know, Dr. Nichols, you know, you're at a teaching institution, so you have students. Is that a big part of the curriculum, identifying dry eye early? And how are you kind of trying to educate your students to make sure that dry eye is top priority in referral or treatment and referrals if they don't want to do the treatment is important?
Yeah, I will say that one of the biggest challenges for optometrists is a bit the sort of misconception of the public. You know, patients will come in for a vision exam, you know, with the vision insurance. And that only gives you, you know, a very specific exam that doesn't cover the medical part also, you know, of dry eye. And patients expect to be very well treated. They want everything taken care of within that context. So we often sell ourselves short in many instances. And this is where you actually have to be able to tell your patient that they need to come back and have a more thorough dry eye examination because you think that they have this condition, it needs to be better managed and you can't do it within the context of that short vision exam. So that actually is a barrier or a problem because, you know, patients will come into our clinic, you know, they have a vision insurance and they want their exam and they want everything though taken care of. So we fight that as optometry in terms of, you know, the medical versus the vision exam. After that, though, I think, you know, teaching students to, you know, to see dry eye early is important. And again, it also gets messed up in the same issues that specialty clinics have, in that the students are learning how to do their exams, they're looking at retina, they're doing all these things. And so they may not be thinking as much either. So it's like prime grounds for teaching them the dry eyes everywhere. You need to be managing it. But we also even refer to, we have a Crystal in our area who we refer to if it, just a dry eye only practice, because sometimes going to a practice like that is really intriguing and positive for patients. And they want to go somewhere to have that specific need taken care of that's different from a teaching clinic. And so, you know, we don't have any problem in referring to that clinic. It all boils down to trust. And, you know, if your people who you're getting referrals from and who you're referring to know what each of you can do and where, you know, what's your lane and where the lanes overlap, and having that communication, I think, is an important thing to teach students. Go meet with these doctors or email or whatever, Zoom, so that you can, you know, let them know your services, or have a packet like we heard about so that they can see what your services are. And again, then that then just creates that trust so that you have what's best for the patient in mind. And if you do that, you won't go wrong, as Cynthia mentioned.
Right. I love that. That's such a great comment, because I find that what I like to do is I like to know in my community who the doctors that do are like have different areas of expertise, and knowing who has different devices for treatment of dry eye. Because we have some, but sometimes I need to send patients out for various reasons. And knowing my community, the different MDs and ODs, and what they're doing, what they love doing, right? So you don't want to send a patient that has a certain condition that doctor doesn't love taking care of. So I really try to find doctors in my area that love taking care of certain types of patients. So I think what you described, having someone like Dr. Brimer in your community who, you know, just, you know, is passionate about making patients, identifying and treating and making patients happy with their, you know, with their condition, is just so wonderful. Dr. Matossian, I know in your community, you know, you founded your institute, you know, you built a huge practice. What did you find were some of the biggest challenges just in working with the community of both MDs and ODs in your practice, in your community?
I think communication is so important, because a lot of the other doctors in the community, when I started to do dry eye, which seems like eons ago when it was not as well known, people didn't really talk about it, was something that people were not very familiar with. So it took me a while to educate my colleagues what I was doing and to assure them these patients are coming back to you. Very much what you said, Crystal. Because nobody wants to lose patients. So assuring them that I will treat them, I will send them back when you want me to send them back, or I will chronically take care of them till they develop a disease entity that you treat, let me know. And by also showing that we had a huge array of different treatment modalities, in-office procedures, at-home remedies, different videos that we shared with our patients, it kind of took the burden off of them and helped the patient. This way they could concentrate on their love, which may be, you know, cataract surgery or LASIK or glaucoma, and give me the things that they were less passionate about doing. It's creating that trust, that communication, and that community to help the patient.
Oh my God. Thank you. So I think all of you, you just had this just great outlook on how to care for patients with dry eye, how to work with the other doctors in the community. And this is just so exciting that we have such a, you know, a breadth of expertise. Because I know that what I find, even though I feel like I'm very knowledgeable, you know, knowledgeable about dry eye, I learned so much and take away so many pearls from all of you. I guess we have time for maybe one or two last pearls from each of you if you want to share. Because again, this is kind of our title is The Modern Approaches for the Optimal Management of Dry Eye Disease. And I think we've covered it in a fantastic way, but perhaps we'll just start with Dr. Nichols and then Dr. Brimer and then Dr. Matossian, just to go through maybe one or two last pearls, you know, for the modern approach of our dry eye patients. Dr. Nichols?
I guess my first tip would be to just look and then do something. So, you know, oftentimes, and that's not artificial tears usually. So slit lamp is your friend, is important. And the meibomian glands need to be evaluated, of course. And don't underestimate what a patient's willing to pay for their treatment or do for their treatment in order to feel better. And I think I learned that early on in dry eye, and I have an example that just stuck with me. And so as we get more and more tools, I think it's important to remember that we want to do what's best for our patients and offer these new therapies that are coming out. And I guess I would say, you know, since we are having a therapy, which we're looking at Demodex too, you know, look, have the patient look down. I mean, that's a critical thing that I think that we're not really doing, and use dyes. So, you know, as Cynthia mentioned earlier, listening green and fluorescein are really critical in the evaluation of ocular surface.
Oh, great point.
All right, guys, I got to go first. So now you get to.
Dr. Barber.
I love that. So when I'm talking about slit lamp exam and just the uniformity of it, the way I approach it, it always starts with look down. Like, it doesn't matter what they're there for. It is look down and look at those lashes. But that's not my pearl. That's hers. So I would say a couple things. Don't feel like just because you don't have everything that you can't treat dry eye. Do something, get your toes wet, because the need is abundant. And these folks, the more you try to kind of put your head in the sand and ignore it, the more you're going to see them recurring on your schedule, and it's going to be a thorn in your side because you don't want to see them because you don't have an answer for them. So it's inevitable that you're going to need to dive in. So go ahead and do it. And the easiest way I could recommend to start is screen everybody. Whatever your method is, just pick something and screen every single person that walks through the door so that it's rising to the surface, it's coming to your attention, and then you're just really being accountable to that result and you're answering the need of the patient. So that's number one, screen everybody. Number two, do not be afraid to invest. I find that this fear of putting capital out there to buy equipment is debilitating for a lot of doctors, that they're paralyzed. And my advice to doctors in deciding what to buy is fourfold. Number one, does it work? If it works, you're going to pay for it. And you're going to be building your reputation and your practice meanwhile. If it doesn't work, I don't care how cheap it is, don't buy it because your reputation is going to suffer for it. Number two, what is the experience like for the patient? Is it pleasant? Did it seem like it was worth the money you charged them? Number three, what's the business model over the course of 3 years? So it's not about the check you write. It's about all the things. What's the disposable cost? What's the profit margin, the MSRP? How many times would you repeat it? Versus, you know, one a year versus twice a year versus every 2 years. And then number four is the people and the support behind the company. So for me, if you are thinking about, man, I want to do dry, I want to do something, but I'm afraid to take that step and write that check, look at those four factors and stop being afraid, because everybody else is going to pass you by. I look in my town and all of a sudden there's like six or seven IPLs popping up. where did this happen? But the last thing I would say is, just because you've gone out and you've bought a device and now you're doing something, you cannot assume that in asylum that it's going to work all by itself. There's nothing out there that is just this easy button that fixes all brands of dry eye and ocular surface disease. You still have to take the time to look at what's the underlying cause and then pair the treatment with it that's right for it. But even that needs ancillary treatment. You know, it's going to need the omega-3, or it's going to need, you know, something else for bacteria. So you've got to take the time to look at it, so that all these IPLs that are popping up or evacuations or whatever it is doesn't end up giving a bad name to the treatment because it was promised to be something it wasn't.
Oh my God, that was a great overview. So many outstanding pearls. Yeah, I really love them all. And I know that Dr. Tyson's probably going to just maybe add her own, but maybe, you know, integrate some of what you just shared, because those are really helpful. Dr. Matosian?
Very, very helpful pearls. Thank you, Kelly and Crystal. What I want to say is, don't feel overwhelmed. I hear it from so many colleagues. Oh my God, Cynthia, where do I start? I can't keep up. There's so much happening. Help me. Well, there are people who are willing to help you. We are here as mentors. Reach out to us. We will be happy to pair you with other mentors. Start with baby steps. We never end up as marathon runners on day one, We have to crawl, walk, start walking, you know, power walking, and eventually be the dry eye center that we want to be. Start small, buy one or two pieces of equipment, master them, then move on to the next, and so forth. And you can't do it by yourself. You need a community. You need your team. So identify people within your practice, staff people who may be as passionate about dry eye or have the potential to be passionate about dry eye, educate them, invest in their training, send them to seminars, take them with you to meetings. So get key people at the front desk who can talk to the patients who are calling so that those patients can be scheduled with you. And so you create your own mini kind of team within the practice, and that's how you start building a dry eye center.
Dr. Vahosi and Dr. Breimer, Dr. Nichols, these are all fantastic pearls. I mean, I just love them all. And they really are really effective in helping our viewers understand exactly, you know, various ways that we can help our patients. I guess the one pearl that I was going to share was that sometimes we can get really stuck in that even though we've tried what we think is almost everything, we just can't figure out how to help a particular patient. And the good news, I think all three of you shared, was that there are experts that really love dry eye, and there are other places that that patients can be sent. So don't give up. There's always other things that can be done. Maybe some even are investigational things we didn't even cover today because we couldn't cover everything. So just don't give up on patients. They're looking for us for guidance. But if you can't particularly help them, just one thing that you can help them with is just recommending someone else who could maybe have a different approach. So with that, I just want to thank each and every one of you, each and all three of you, and Ophthalmology Times, of course, for having us here. It's really fun to share and learn from each of you. And I know our viewers and everyone here really appreciates all of you. So thank you so much.
Thank you.